Welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast. My name is Alan Wilson and I'm the host of the podcast. And each week the podcast aims to give you the opportunity to reflect on some of the things that make up a leadership journey. The next 2 weeks my guest is Ian Parkinson. I'm delighted that Ian is joining us on the podcast. Ian is a leadership specialist with the Church Pastoral Aid Society, CPAS. And this week we'll make a start as Ian talks about some of the early stages of his leadership journey. Ian, welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you for taking the time to join us. Appreciate the time that you're giving to us. Ian, some people will know you as I'm speaking from obviously from Northern Ireland. Some people here will know you primarily through New Wine circles, I think.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit just about what is your role? How do you describe what you do?
Right, yeah. Well, I was obviously for a number of years a New Wine regional director over here in England, heading up New Wine's work in the north of England and developing that. But I laid that down and at the same time laid down local church leadership, which I've been involved with 30 years, just over 2 years ago. And I now work for an organisation which, again, some will know, the Church Pastoral Aid Society, CPAS. CPAS is an Anglican home mission organisation, established in the early years of the 19th century to take the gospel to every man's door. That was the slogan under which it was.
Take the gospel to every man's door, yeah.
That's right, yeah. And we were still concerned to that takes place. We do it slightly differently these days. So rather than being directly, as it were, an evangelistic organisation, which we were for many years, our focus is very much on equipping the church, take the gospel to every person's door. And one of the key ways in which we seek to do that is by training and resourcing leaders, and I suppose helping leaders and particularly church leaders grow in their capacity to engage in missional leadership and to lead others well and to empower all God's people for the work of mission and ministry. My own particular role, I have a job that was created just a couple of years ago. I suppose it's fair to say that on our leadership training journey, CPAS, we started off by producing resources, doing lots of events, and making them available to people. There were things that we did ourselves. Over the last 10 or 15 years, things have changed quite markedly in that now the vast majority, 80-odd% of what we do at the behest of others. So we're now finding that Anglican dioceses or other bodies are coming to us saying, please help us. Please do resource, you know, come and do training for us. So most of our work is doing things like, you know, clergy leadership programs for Anglican dioceses. And work was beginning to open up in theological colleges and courses, places where people train for ordained ministry in the Church of England. So CPAS created a new role 2 years ago. That's the role that I now occupy. So I rejoice in the title of Leadership Specialist.
Leadership Specialist, that's really very very grand, yeah.
Very grand, you know, it's absolutely, it's impressive.
Yeah.
Leadership Specialist in Theological Education, which means that I spend virtually all my time in more than half of the places in England and Ireland, actually, where people train for ordained Anglican ministry, running leadership training. So that might be a whole accredited module, MA level or undergraduate level. It might be, in one college, for example, we do a school of leadership session, a two-hour session every week throughout the period of people's training. We'll be able to tackle in a fairly fulsome way, you know, lots of leadership disciplines. To the one-off or occasional thing or weekend course for, you know, for other training institutions.
Yeah, if the MA thing, I'll maybe come looking for your book list or something like that for some work that I'm going to be doing later this year.
Oh, well, happy to.
always on the lookout. And I think one of the things we'll chat about over the course of these couple of episodes is books. You know, the old adage that leaders are readers.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we'll chat about some of the things that you found particularly helpful in that. So within all of that, you know, describing your role, I mean, you mentioned previous involvement with New Wine Leadership. You mentioned local church leadership, but let's go way back. You know, your journey of faith, your journey into what we call, whether we like the term or not, vocational Christian leadership. I guess you Anglicans, you know, you can call it ordained ministry. Some of the Free Church folks, we're not quite sure what to call it, you know. But, so vocational Christian leadership or something like that. Talk us through from the beginning. Where are you from originally? What was, you know, how did you come to faith? These kind of things.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Leeds in the north of England. We moved to York just down the road when I was 11 from a mining village. I grew up in a mining community. My family were, till my grandparents' generation, were coal miners. My dad was a teacher. He got a job in York. We moved there when I was 11. We were, I suppose you would say, a traditional church-going family. Went to a traditional church. And I think the idea that God was real just never crossed my radar. It was, you know, it was the kind of church where there was no expectation. There was no need for a supernatural God to explain what happened there. Where it was, when I was about 12, and I suppose at the age when you begin to think seriously about life's big issues for the first time, that I would say that I just began to be aware in a very surprising way of the reality of God. He made himself known to me. I can sort of look back over a period of a few months, at the beginning of which I would say I had no sense at all. The thought had never occurred to me that God might be real, at the end of which I had a clear personal relationship with him. I remember quite spontaneously one night kneeling by my bed. This was, remember, you know, in a church which had no biblical teaching, really. There was no sort of gospel ministry. But I remember having worked out that if God were real, it made sense to be with him. And I remember kneeling and saying, I do believe you're real. And if you're God, I want you to be my God. And therefore, I want my life to be tied up with your life. And I say, nobody told me this is what you do. But I, you know, found myself asking for him to be part of my life. And was aware from that moment onwards, really, of his reality, of his grace. I mean, it was some years before I stumbled then upon a church in the middle of York, St. Michael of Belfry, where David Watson, some will remember, the vicar. He was pioneering charismatic evangelical churches in the 70s.
Yeah, he was the vicar when you discovered the church, is that right?
He was, yeah. And so I, in fact, what happened was that my mum and a friend went to one of the guest services that they'd heard about that he was doing in the middle of York in the York Minster. And this is a traditional church-going mum, quite disturbed by all this, you know. And, I mean, looking back, it was pretty tame, but actually it was profoundly unsettling. But she, you know, went to this guest service, gave her life to Christ, was followed up by somebody from Michael's, and as a family we began to get involved there, and I got involved with the youth work, and that was a really significant place, I think, in terms of being for the first time really exposed to biblical teaching. There was a wonderful youth ministry there which took seriously the discipling of young people, and it was not long before I went off to university that I really got involved there, and it set me up really well. And I remember going up to, I mean, university was a very formative
time. Where was that?
I went to Durham.
Durham,
Did a law degree at Durham, and that was a very formative time. I sort of nailed my colours to the mast early on, again, being in the company of Christians who were older and wiser than me, who were further ahead on the journey, was really formative. And those 3 years there were a real time of shaping, and probably where I began to get something of a sense, an appetite for serving God. Mm-hmm. I think that was probably been birthed in me to an extent before I went. I'd been given as an older teenager the encouragement to step into some, modest experiences of leadership. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, one of the things I reflect on is that naturally, I don't think I ever saw myself as a leader growing up. But the work of God in me began to give me a confidence, shall we say, to lead in spiritual things. Mm-hmm. For me, very much, as I've reflected on that over the years, I suppose, I reflect that, A, God makes us what we could never be, unaided.
Yeah.
But I'm also, one of the questions that we often engage with, especially when we try and sort of pare leadership down and say, what are the roots of leadership? I'm more convinced that it is not just a spiritual gift, i.e., something that God sort of forms in us, but almost the result of the outworking of God's wider work in our lives. And I suppose on that basis, if I want to encourage people to grow in leadership, clearly I want to encourage people to grow in different leadership skills and disciplines, but I suppose fundamentally I want to encourage people to grow in terms of their own walk with God, their own openness to Him. I think the more we cultivate the work, the presence of God in our lives, the more likely we are to be able to exercise influence for Him. Mm-hmm. And that was my experience, I think. As I grew in that way, I found that I was exercising influence for Him. And university was a time when I was given some leadership in the Christian Union there, and opportunities to preach. I mean, I look back on some of the poor Methodist congregations around Durham I went out to preach for. Goodness me, I must have said. But actually, having the opportunity to have a go was, again, not only, I suppose, fueled my appetite for serving and leading, but I suppose I was able to learn from my own mistakes.
Yeah, what were you learning at that time? And I think what you've already said is very profound. That sense of leadership flowing out of what God is doing more widely in a person's life. But what were some of the specific things that you were learning about leadership as you went along in those university years?
Yeah, I suppose I'd love to say that I was a profoundly reflective person, but I think in those days I wasn't. I think reflection has come later, so it's easier to reflect now on what was going on. But I think I was beginning to learn things. I'm sure that in the early days, whether it was in preaching or leading in the CU or trying to reach friends for Christ, I was very enthusiastic and was probably significantly operating out of my own natural strength, in inverted commas, advisedly. But I suppose one thing I was beginning to learn, or be taught by God, was that that was no basis alone for leadership, but actually the only solid basis for leadership was a profound reliance upon Him. That came about, I suppose, through crashing and burning.
Yeah, that's what I was going to. I was just wondering, because I think it tends to be how that happens, doesn't it? We fall flat on our faces.
I mean, I think that one of the things I do reflect on more and more. I mean, one of the things that I think I've found over the years is that on numbers of occasions, God has allowed me to get into situations way out of my depth, and in that situation the only recourse you have is to cry out to Him.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's over a protracted period of time.
Yeah.
Those were the seasons in which I probably learned most. And in fact, what happened at university, I had a lot of probably far too much, you know, responsibility beyond my capacity to deal with. But that's the nature, isn't it, of life at that kind of time. I remember very clearly in my final year entering into a period by my final year at university, I'd offered for ordination in the Church of England. I had a strong sense of call to church leadership to lay aside the legal career that I had planned.
Okay, can I ask you how you sensed that?
Yeah, I think it was I think that I was increasingly feeling a call to engage in if I say evangelistic ministry, I mean I had a strong heart for the lost, and I wanted to give my life over to helping those who had not yet found faith find faith, and so I would say that the call was as much as anything a call to offer myself for that purpose to partner with God in the work of the gospel. As a ordination in the Church of England as an Anglican seemed an obvious way of doing that.
Sure.
I mean, it's interesting. I might talk about this later, but I mean, for many, I actually didn't. I was ordained and ended up leading local churches, but it was 9 years of ordained ministry before I actually became a vicar. I was a perpetual curate, because in my early days I was doing a lot of university missions and those kinds of things, and so the call, I suppose, was to evangelism, and I just had a growing sense that one obvious door to push was ordination in the Church of England.
Yeah.
The Church of England saw fit to accept me for training. And so by the time I was in my final term at the uni...
Where did you do... Did you stay at Durham for that? Or did you go somewhere?
No. Well, what I did was I actually took a year out. I went and nursed. I decided I wanted to do something different. So I did a year as a psychiatric nursing assistant.
Wow.
Just to see...
That's different.
sort of side of life, and then went to Oxford, to Wycliffe Hall, to train for ordination.
Okay, yeah.
But, from that final sort of year at uni, right through to halfway through the year before I went to start training for ordination, I was in the most profound wilderness time. And I think it was almost as if God had me where he wanted me. You know, I'd now sort of burnt my bridges in terms of any other career for that time. I'd nailed, I'd firmly committed to what I sensed he was calling me into, and as if he said, right, okay, I've got you now, but there are things we need to address here, Ian. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be of any use to me, there are some fairly weak foundations on which, elements of your faith and your understanding of ministry and leadership are built, so why don't we shake those a bit?
So how long did that last, that wilderness experience?
About a year.
A year, right.
Yeah. And it started, so I was in the Christian Union in Durham. My particular responsibility was for mission. Every 3 years we had a major mission. It was a large CU in those days of several hundred people, and when the CU did a mission, the university took notice, and I was organising this week of events, and it was the night before it all started. I remember sitting bolt upright in bed being confronted, by God with sort of... I remember even thinking, Ian, are you sure you're a Christian? It was a fundamental searching out, as if everything was suddenly being shaken. And over the course of the next 12 months, I was just wrung out, I think. And it was a horrendous time. I remember, bizarrely, it ending, actually, in Durham. A year later, I was back there visiting friends, and I remember my former prayer partner staying with him. He was a mature student, a Canadian. And I remember, at 3 in the morning, kneeling with him, and I remember praying and saying, well, God, you know, I've sought you, I've tried to find you in all this stuff, you know, you just seem further away than ever. I believe that you've called me to lead in your church, but that seems like a joke. Basically, you know, if you want me, you know where I am, kind of thing. You know, I've got nothing left to sort of to give. I can't strive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to bed, waking up, feeling no different, worse if anything, and walking around Durham the next day, and suddenly being overwhelmed by just the sense of the presence of God. It has been a complete emptying.
Yeah.
And then a remarkable sort of infilling with the Holy Spirit. And I suppose what I began to learn then, although that there were many other lessons to learn along the way, but what I began to learn, I suppose, was that the place to look was God. That the only basis for any effective service and leadership was encounter with him and a reliance upon the resources that he wanted to give. And so I think I was, you know, that was, I was very different thereafter.
Yeah. Ian, I'd love to just dwell on this a little bit longer broaden this out. I mean, one of the things that I've been particularly interested to observe and reflect on is in the story of Moses. I did a podcast on this a number of weeks ago. The story of Moses and the different phases of Moses' life, and you know, I often suggest that Moses' story is like a paradigm of a leadership journey.
Yeah.
And as you well know, the middle 40 years of his life were very much the wilderness years, the exile years,
yes,
where, you know, in terms of narrative, very little happens in the biblical text. But yet it seems to me that that season of Moses' life comes to represent a stripping. And I just wonder, do you think that is an experience that most or many Christian leaders can expect to go through?
I think if we're remotely serious about serving God in his strength and of being ultimately useful to him, then there's no alternative. The stronger we are naturally, or the more inclined we are to trust in our own resources and not run the risk of faith, the more necessary that experience is. And I think it's perfectly possible to fight shy of it and to avoid it.
Yeah.
We almost have to submit to that experience. But I remember thinking, I've come to a point of no return. I can't go back to what I was.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the future looks like. I feel stuck in this middle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was a profound sort of searching time. But later, I think there is no way round it, really. And again, when we look at the great figures of faith, I mean, Jesus himself, you know, who goes through his own wilderness experience, and the writer of the Epistle to the Hebrews tells us that he was made perfect through his suffering. Moses, you mentioned. I mean, Joseph is another obvious one, isn't he?
Yeah.
Who, you know, again, has great natural and spiritual gift.
Yeah.
But actually, perhaps his character needs to catch up with his gifting.
And,
there has to be almost a that sense of humility before God or whatever. But there's a profound shaping which, you know, makes him the person that is useful to God. I mean, Nehemiah, again, one of my great heroes of faith, and we find him first in chapter one of his book.
Mm-hmm.
There's a profound period of agony in which he is, you know, sort of stripped bare before God is able to, against all odds, to use.
Yeah.
So I think there's a repeated pattern. That should alert us to something, shouldn't it?
Yes, it should. I just wonder, In relation to all of this, let's say someone's listening to the podcast and they're saying, you know what, I think I may be in a wilderness situation. What counsel would you give to someone in that circumstance, Ian?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, cry out to God, I think, is what I would say. Even when, you know, the gates of heaven seem barred to you. I can point to two experiences in my... That first one, you know, just before I started training for ordained ministry, and then, ironically, about 12 years later, just before, or as I took up my first incumbency, my first post as a senior leader, I had another, even, I would say, deeper experience of brokenness and coming to the end of myself. And both times were hellish when I was going through them.
Mm-hmm.
And both lasted the best part of a year. And I think, you know, that there comes a point where almost... Well, I think two things. One, clearly, we wait for God to act. Not in a passive way, but in a, you know, an active way. And I think that those times teach us what it is to wait on him. Active waiting. And I think part of that, secondly, is quite simply crying out to him. I find myself at times crying out, you know, almost in agony, Lord, where are you? Will you not come and lift this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do I need to do to get breakthrough? And I think initially certainly my reaction was, I need to do something to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
And then realizing, coming to the point of realizing that you can't do anything to fix this. But we simply have to just, you know, cry out to God. I mean, I did persevere with the things which had traditionally been a source of nourishment to me. So, mm-hmm. You know, reading the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I found prayer very hard in those times because there seemed to be no reality to it. But sometimes, you know, reading the Bible, especially reading the Psalm,
mm-hmm.
And reading the experience of those who've been through similar time, that was just, you know, gold dust, really.
Mm.
And listening to worship songs that sort of ministered to my soul, it was almost like applying medicine, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it was just all I could do, really. But press on, I think. These are times which are designed, I think, to teach us what it is to cry out to God. I mean, the psalmist in Psalm 42 and 43, who goes through a very similar experience, cries out to God, longs for God. You know, that's a psalm which has lots of words of longing. And I think if we can somehow cultivate a deep longing for him, because I think that's what these times, in God's economy, that's what these times are almost designed to do. Teach us to long for him rather than anything else.
Yeah, wow. Ian, that's really profound. I'm so glad that you've talked about this, and thank you for sharing so personally about it as well. We're coming towards the end of the episode, Ian. Let's just maybe, you know, come back to your timeline.
Yeah.
A quick summary of those years then that you moved into of local church leadership. Where did that happen and what was going on during that time?
So we did 9 years in two places as a curate, as an associate member of staff in Hull and Middlesbrough, post-industrial cities in the north of England. And those years were particularly tied up with... I think the principal focus of my ministry was evangelistic. So as well as serving on the staff of churches and getting involved in the normal run of stuff, I was, especially in Middlesbrough, I was for 6 years. I think a number of things were happening there. I was leading the evangelism in the church. I was doing missions elsewhere. But actually, I was learning how to lead a church. And I was working under an outstanding leader, Ian Reed, now with the Lord. He had taken 10 years before I arrived, a church which was very traditional, which had been basically run by Freemasons, and had very little spiritual life, and had over 10 years seen it turned around gloriously. It was a really thriving, effective, witnessing church where the presence of the Spirit was manifest. And I just learned from him what it was. That gave me hope, I think, for, you know, more traditional churches, shall we say.
Yeah.
And in fact, in 92, although I never really wanted to be a vicar, I thought I was going to be an itinerant evangelist, we had this remarkable turnaround and had since God's call to go and take on a struggling church just down the road, sort of 10 miles down the road on the coast, in a rundown seaside town, a very rundown church, which had numbers of significant challenges, and a very traditional middle-of-the-road Anglican church with, you know, a quite elderly congregation. But having seen God work through Ian's ministry, Ian Reid's ministry in Middlesbrough, I think that gave us, you know, hope and something of a blueprint around which to improvise. And so we spent 9 years there, had a glorious time there, hard at times, but we saw God do wonderful things. The church thoroughly turned around, and it was a glorious season, really. We then sensed God's call to move across the Pennines to Greater Manchester, Stockport, and took on a church which had had a much healthier history, but which again had somewhat declined in the previous sort of years, and again faced some significant challenges. And we had 15 wonderful years there, and again we saw that church really thrive. We planted a church out from there into the next door community, a very deprived community. We saw some, you know, real engagement with the community in our own neck of the woods. And very early on, just a couple of years into our time there, Nadine, my wife, and I were asked to, by the New Wine leadership, to take on leadership of a new phase in New Wine. Sort of work in the north of England.
Okay, tell us
a new summer conference for the north.
Yeah.
To develop the new wine networks in the north. And so much of our time there was, you know, spent doing that as well. So, and that again was glorious.
Can I just interrupt you for a second? You know, a lot of people will be aware of New Wine. People will be aware of New Wine Ireland as well. For those who are not, just in a sentence or two, talk about the New Wine movement.
The New Wine came out, really, I suppose, or was it something of a response to the early ministry of John Wimber, founder of the Vineyard Movement in England, and Andrews Chorley Wood, where David Pitchers, Bishop David Pitchers, was vicar, was profoundly impacted by Wimber's ministry and experienced a fresh outpouring of the Spirit and an empowering for mission in the power of the Spirit. And David began to gather leaders of churches to share with them what God had been sort of sharing with him. And after a few years, these leaders who were beginning to come alive in the power of the Spirit and get a real appetite for kingdom ministry were saying, well, how do we get our church on board with this? And they hit upon this idea of doing a summer event. It was going to be a one-off event down in the West Country, the showground. Churches could come, groups from churches could come, camp together, experience worship, teaching, and ministry in the power of the Spirit, have seminars, helping them to take this home and so on. And it was so successful, they thought they'd do it again, and they've been doing it now for 30 years.
30 years, right, okay.
And so, the strap line is local churches changing nations. And New Wine, many people know it for its summer conferences, but really it's about what goes on throughout the year. It's about the resourcing of churches to engage in Holy Spirit mission and ministry.
Yeah, was there a strapline also last year? I mean, I had a couple of days at New Wine Ireland last year, and was there something about the other days of the other 364 days of the year?
So not just the 1 week, but the 51 weeks.
Okay, that was it. Yeah.
So, you know, I suppose that's a response to the fact that some people think, oh, it's just a summer event, and actually, the event exists to resource the church for the whole year, you know, that is our focus, is not just on doing a good event, but actually on resourcing churches. And in fact, most of what New Wine organise takes place not in the summer. With, you know, all the resourcing conferences, the network of leaders, the you know, all the church planting initiatives and so on go on throughout the year. So that's, yeah, by 2003 we had grown and grown and grown, but it was in England, I suppose, strongest in the south. We wanted to resource churches in the north, especially those from poorer areas.
Yeah.
And so we thought a good way of doing that would be to launch a northern conference as a focus for our work there, which we did. That ran until 2013. We're all back together now in one place. But we on the back of that, we were able to develop networks to grow our work in some of the poorest inner urban areas. And yeah, very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Place of resourcing, really, especially for leaders.
Yeah, great. Ian, we're out of time for this particular episode. It's been great. It's been very, very rich. We'll come back next time and we'll talk a little bit more about maybe, you know, some of the, as you stand back, some of the leadership things that you have learned. And also, you know, that adage, leaders are readers. We need to talk books a bit, you know. So we'll talk a bit about that. So thank you for your time
That's
today.
A pleasure. I look forward to talking again.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Ian.
Bye.
Bye. Well, I hope that you've enjoyed this conversation with Ian Parkinson from CPAS. Ian will be back with us next week. He'll be talking some more about leadership. He'll talk about some of the tasks of leadership. He'll be bringing some of his top book recommendations for leaders. And I think it's only fair to mention Ian's own book on leadership. It's called Reignite: Seeing God Rekindle Life and Purpose in Your Church. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast, the Leadership Journey podcast, on iTunes. And we look forward to talking to you next time. Bye for now.